May it please the Court. David Winters, Butler, Rubin, Saltarelli, and Boyd for the defendant appellant, Jose Suarez. As a matter of law, a person cannot be found to have illegally procured United States citizenship where that person has committed unlawful acts that adversely reflect on the applicant's moral character, absent extenuating circumstances under the regulation 8 CFR 316.10B33, and as with our briefs, I'll refer to that as the regulation from here on out. And the district court erred to the extent it held otherwise. That is our first point. And our second point that we'll discuss today is that even if the district court did not err that a person could be found to have illegally procured U.S. citizenship where they committed unlawful acts, there is a genuine issue of material fact as to whether there were extenuating circumstances in Mr. Suarez's case.
I assume you agree that if the conviction had come before the naturalization, he would be statutorily ineligible for naturalization as a person lacking good moral character.
We do.
So if that's so, how can the timing of the conviction matter? In other words, all the conduct came during the relevant time period. Wouldn't it just be a bizarre result if the person who manages to skirt the law and lie about it obtains an advantage over a person who pleads guilty before the naturalization?
I would say that in this case, it is yet to be determined that someone lied. So that would be an issue that would be determined on the second and third counts in the government's complaint. But to answer Your Honor's question, it would not be unusual here because the regulation is what provides that someone who commits unlawful acts without a conviction can nevertheless be granted U.S. citizenship where there are extenuating circumstances.
I'm really having a lot of trouble about the extenuating circumstances argument. I understand this was his first and only conviction. I have to tell you, I've been on the bench for more than 26 years, and I have never, ever in those 26 years seen a defendant whose very first drug transaction involved 200 pounds of a drug. It seems far more likely that this is a man who simply wasn't caught before.
Well, I think that those are not facts that were found in the earlier criminal proceeding. For example, the fact there was never any determination that he had a prior criminal history, and I think that there's never been any finding of fact to that. And I think that there are extenuating circumstances in this circumstance, and since that seems to be the focus of Your Honor's concern, I'll leap to that argument. The regulation doesn't require circumstances that excuse, circumstances that completely mitigate conduct. The regulation actually requires something much less. The regulation requires a finding of extenuating circumstances, and extenuating circumstances are circumstances that lessen the severity of the guilt. And the regulation imparts upon the examining officer a tremendous amount of discretion to determine not only what will qualify as an extenuating circumstance, but also the quantum of extenuating that there needs to be. The regulation doesn't provide that it needs to be 1% or 99%. That's all punted to the examining officer. And that's really the focus of our first argument, that as a matter of law, a person can't be found to have illegally procured United States citizenship under the Unlawful Acts Regulation. And to be clear, that's the only grounds in count one of the government's complaint upon which the government is moving. So actually, as a matter of law, under the regulation clearly provides that INS examining officers, and by the way, the government in their response does not seem to disagree with this discretion, that examining officers have discretion to determine whether extenuating circumstances exist and the quantum of extenuating circumstances that might be less necessary to remove a particular unlawful act out of the ambit of the regulation. And the INS Adjudicator's Field Manual at Chapter 10, Section 15, really drives this point home when it says, A regulation cannot dictate the outcome of a discretionary application. Now, what this means is if this court were to find that the district court correctly held below that there can be a finding that good moral character is precluded under this regulation, what that means is similarly situated individuals with precisely the same facts could actually have different results under lawful applications of the examining officer's discretion. And I think that this is one problem with the government's position and a problem with the district court's holding. It basically also permits the courts to second-guess discretionary decisions of examining officers and upend naturalization decisions that were made years in the past. Someone who commits an unlawful act where an examining officer knows about the extenuating circumstances and makes a determination that those extenuating circumstances remove the unlawful acts from the ambit of the regulation can never rest easy because there's always a chance that it could be revisited years later. And it could be revisited years later when prevailing social norms have changed and the good moral character determination would be different. And I think that the court should consider the implications of this, because I want to stress that under the unlawful acts regulation here, it is actually irrelevant whether or not my client disclosed or did not disclose anything. That's not the question, and the district court actually makes this clear when the district court says the question is whether or not Mr. Suarez was statutorily ineligible at the time of his immigration naturalization application. And so because what Mr. Suarez did or did not say to the immigration examining officer is irrelevant, the only thing that's relevant is whether as a matter of law that Mr. Suarez could be found to have illegally procured his citizenship. And no statute, no regulation forbids what he did. The only person who could make a determination as to the fact that Mr. Suarez was precluded from determining good moral character is the examining officer under this regulation.
No. For denaturalization proceedings, courts are charged with the responsibility of making those decisions, and we do so by reference to the prospective decision-making that the examiner would be in if the procedural posture of the case were the naturalization decision in the first place. But the court necessarily has to do it in a retrospective way. And that's what sets up some difficulty, but it's not insurmountable difficulty. So this is not a situation where only the examining officer's viewpoint counts. The court has to make the determination as a matter of law based on the facts in the case.
Although if it's true that to address Your Honor's point, if it's true that the examining officer could have exercised discretion legally under the regulation to have found in favor of my client, how can it be said that Mr. Suarez illegally procured his citizenship? And that really is the foundation right. determination that's being made here.
Right. My point is only that the court needs to make a retrospective judgment about whether the circumstances of the crime in question, although it was committed during the statutory period, but the conviction occurred after naturalization, was completed, whether the circumstances of the crime are sufficiently extenuating that that exercise of discretion would have been warranted. And so that's the operative question here. And you seem to be arguing that the court can't ever make that decision because it's a matter of discretion, but the court must make the decision in the context that we find ourselves here and that the district court found itself, which is to say a denaturalization proceeding, which is necessarily retrospective, although governed by the same standards that would be applicable at naturalization.
I would respectfully submit that it's correct that courts can revisit these kinds of determinations, particularly in the naturalization context. But because the gateway question is whether or not somebody illegally procured their citizenship in violation of some statute, I think the fact that the examining officer doesn't just make a determination of fact as to whether there's extenuating circumstances. The examining officer makes a determination of law as to what the quantum would be, which means that reasonably situated examining officers could come to different conclusions about what quantum of extenuating circumstances is necessary. And although I do believe that the court is empowered to revisit the question of whether there's extenuating circumstances.
It's not a revisitation of that question here, because the hearing examiner who decided the naturalization question here didn't have this information before him or her. That's my whole point here. The court is not revisiting anything. The court in a denaturalization proceeding is making this judgment in the first instance, and so the circumstances of the crime have to rise to the level of extenuating according to the standard in the regulation, so far as it is a standard. And the court makes a judgment about that. And this gets back to Judge Rovner's question, which is, what is it about your client's case that makes it extenuating? It was an awful lot of drug quantity, and he was not a minor participant.
I see I'm in my rebuttal time, but I would like to respond to Your Honor's question. First of all, the amount of the drug quantity is something that we believe was not established in a way that's preclusive here. And then second of all, we believe that our client is also not precluded from arguing about the significance of his role, because any findings about his, whether it was a major or minor role, were not findings that were necessary to the jury's judgment, but findings that were made in sentencing. We argued in our brief that facts found in sentencing do not have preclusive effect, and the government did not respond to cases that we addressed. I'll return to those arguments on rebuttal. Thank you.
Dobler? May it please the Court, I'm Kirsten Dobler on behalf of the United States. There's no genuine issue of material fact that Mr. Suarez was ineligible for citizenship when he naturalized in 1998. 2 years earlier, Mr. Suarez committed two crimes that precluded a finding that he was a person of good moral character, which is required for naturalization. And first, these crimes, conspiracy and possession with intent to distribute marijuana, were unlawful acts that adversely reflected on Mr. Suarez's moral character.
You know, the defendant's best argument, it seems to me, is that the adjudicator's field manual expressly says that whether an unlawful act is the applicant's only offense can be considered an extenuating circumstance. I'm referring to the provision that was cited on page 18 of the reply brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
If that's the case, then how can we say there are no fact questions that would preclude summary judgment?
Your Honor, an extenuating circumstance necessarily has to mitigate lack of moral character. Whether or not Mr. Suarez had previous convictions or not has no bearing on Mr. Suarez's state of mind, his intent at the time he committed these crimes, which are crimes involving moral turpitude within the meaning of the INA, and aggravated felonies. Moreover, that provision of the adjudicator's field manual actually does not list prior offenses as a possible extenuating circumstance. What it does list it as is a consideration for an adjudicator to take into account when determining whether an act unlawfully reflects on an applicant's moral character. That's a different question of extenuating circumstance, and in fact, the adjudicator's field manual makes it clear that an extenuating circumstance must mitigate lack of moral character. That's precisely what the 11th Circuit held in Jean-Baptiste. They're parallel standards, Your Honor. So the fact that Mr. Suarez had no previous convictions has no bearing on this case. It is certainly not an extenuating circumstance that would have permitted a finding that he was a person of good moral character despite his commissions of these crimes. Counsel also argued that Mr. Suarez's minimal role was an extenuating circumstance. First and foremost, Mr. Suarez is collaterally estopped from suggesting that he played merely a minimal role in this drug trafficking conspiracy. And the court need not rely on the sentencing documents to arrive at that conclusion. The jury found Mr. Suarez guilty as charged in the indictment, and that indictment included a charge that Mr. Suarez knowingly and intentionally possessed approximately 196 pounds of marijuana with the intent to distribute it. And it also contained several charges suggesting that Mr. Suarez played an important role in this conspiracy. Among those charges was that Mr. Suarez and two of his co-conspirators discussed discussed distributing the marijuana, and that Mr. Suarez spoke with several of his co-conspirators regarding the pickup of the marijuana in Chicago in October of 1996, as well as the fact that Mr. Suarez and his other co-conspirators had multiple conversations and meetings that discussed the pickup and transportation of this marijuana. And as Mr. Suarez acknowledges in his reply, the jury in his criminal case found that he introduced persons that he knew wished to buy marijuana to persons he knew wished to sell marijuana. And the district court then determined that Mr. Suarez played an advisory role, and this court held that there was no plain error in that decision in adjusting Mr. Suarez's base level offense upward by 3 points, given his involvement in the conspiracy. So again, that's not a mitigating factor that could permit this court to find that Mr. Suarez was a person of good moral character when he committed these underlying crimes. Counsel has also argued in his briefs that the fact that Mr. Suarez received no compensation in exchange for his role in this conspiracy is an extenuating circumstance. And again, that has nothing to do with Mr. Suarez's state of mind at the time he committed these crimes, and that's the key question. Drug trafficking is a crime involving moral turpitude, not because somebody sells drugs with the intent to make money, but because somebody knowingly and intentionally possesses drugs with the intent to distribute them. That's the intent that's base and vile, and that's the intent that's evil. That's what makes it a crime involving moral turpitude. That Mr. Suarez received no money has no bearing on that determination. And I'd also like to address counsel's argument that the unlawful acts provision cannot serve as the basis for a denaturalization proceeding because it involves a discretionary determination. There's no support for the argument that because this unlawful acts catch-all provision under the INA and the implementing regulations contains some discretionary aspects that nobody can ever be denaturalized under this particular statute. That runs contrary to what other courts have held, such as the 11th Circuit in Jean-Baptiste and the 9th Circuit in Dang, as well as several district court cases. And although they didn't look at the issue of whether or not this catch-all provision was discretionary such that it couldn't serve as the basis, following Mr. Suarez's argument, if that's the conclusion, then it follows that nobody could ever be denaturalized under this catch-all provision, and that's obviously not what other cases have held. I also note that in Fedorenko, Justice Marshall specifically acknowledged that courts necessarily and properly exercise discretion in characterizing certain facts while determining whether or not an applicant for citizenship meets some of the requirements for naturalization. And those factors include not only whether somebody meets the requirements for good moral character, but also whether that person has a sufficient understanding of the English language, of American history, and of American civics. But Justice Marshall characterized that discretion as limited, and that limited discretion did not preclude denaturalization. It's also worth noting that if Congress wanted to exempt somebody in Mr. Suarez's position from the denaturalization statute, 8 U.S.C. 1451, then Congress could have done so. But that's highly unlikely, however, given the INA, because as you've already noted, that would essentially be a decision by Congress to exclude somebody who committed these kinds of crimes, which are crimes involving moral turpitude and aggravated felonies, and who then hid those crimes from the INS or now from USCIS, and then just managed to avoid being convicted until after he naturalized. It's highly unlikely, given the INA, that that's something that Congress would have chosen to do. And the district court was correct when it determined that Mr. Suarez's interpretation of the catch-all provision turns the requirement for good moral character on its head. It doesn't make sense to say that just because Mr. Suarez wasn't caught until after he naturalized, particularly where he hid his crimes from the INS, that he's somehow able to show that he's a person of good moral character, whereas if he committed the very same crimes but had he been convicted about 3 months earlier before he naturalized, he would have been absolutely barred from showing that he was a person of good moral character under both 8 U.S.C. 1101 F3 and 8 U.S.C. 1101 F8. Your Honor, in conclusion, the United States asks this court to affirm the district court's order granting summary judgment and revoking Mr. Suarez's naturalization. Mr. Suarez's crimes, and particularly the nature of his crimes, prohibit a finding that Mr. Suarez was a person of good moral character when he needed to be. The fact that Mr. Suarez wasn't convicted of these crimes until after he naturalized, despite that he committed them before he naturalized, doesn't change that fact. Accordingly, Mr. Suarez illegally procured his citizenship. This court must revoke his naturalization. If there are no further questions, the government rests on its brief.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Winter?
The government says that if Congress had wanted to expressly make what Mr. Suarez did a bar to naturalization, it could do so. And that is actually true. Here, this regulation does not provide an absolute bar to somebody who commits unlawful acts. Congress and the Attorney General are actually empowered to do so. But what they have done here is something different. They haven't provided a categorical bar. They have empowered examining officers to make discretionary determinations where there are extenuating circumstances. The government also says that the district court was correct when it said that what Mr. Suarez's reading of the unlawful acts regulation turns the requirement on its head. Because it allows somebody who hid those crimes. There's still a second and third ground here, arguing that Mr. Suarez illegally procured his citizenship by virtue of making false statements and hiding things. So actually Congress has provided a means for the government to attempt to revoke naturalization where there's been a misrepresentation. This is a different grounds, and this is a ground not about whether or not the basis of which is not whether or not Mr. Suarez made a false statement or omitted something material. This ground is different. This ground is whether or not he was actually statutorily ineligible. So I disagree with the government's contention that this would turn that requirement on its head, because the government still has a remedy were this court to reverse or remand the district court's opinion. And then I'd like to also close that Mr. Suarez, it's true that Mr. Suarez was convicted for these crimes, and we do not contest the fact that those are stopped. But what Mr. Suarez did was introduce people in the sale of marijuana, and I do contend that, first of all, the regulation only requires extenuating circumstances, not I'm not sure what the government meant by mitigate, but all that's necessary is that the circumstances lessen the severity. The examining officer has discretion to determine how much so. And in this circumstance, I believe that a person in the community of Mr. Suarez's residence, and that is Chicago, Illinois, could say that someone had good moral character, that had not touched any drugs but introduced people who were involved in drugs, and specifically marijuana. And marijuana is a drug about which I think it can be fairly said that the communities in which we live have ambivalent, at best, feelings. And marijuana is almost decriminalized in some states in the union, and all you have to do is turn on movies and television, and you will see movies and television shows portraying marijuana as a fairly harmless drug. And I'm not saying that that's correct. I'm just saying that that reflects a variety of feelings in the communities in which we live about the use of marijuana. And that's why I do not believe that it is incredible to state that Mr. Suarez could have established a genuine issue, did establish a genuine issue of fact as to whether there was extenuating circumstances such that he could show good moral character. We would urge the court to reverse and remand. We thank you.
Thanks to both counsel.
He was appointed.
Oh. And Mr. Winter, you were appointed to this case? Thank you very much for accepting the appointment here, and did an excellent job representing your client.